What I will go through is, thank you, Sadhu, Sadhu. Okay. Today, I want to do some, actually, revision with you, so that you can get this very important message understood. The purpose of coming to this type of meditation, people call it Vipassana meditation, or in English it's translated as insight meditation. You see, there are two very important reasons why people want to develop this type of meditation. Of course, other people who don't have the proper understanding, they may want it for different reasons. That one, not so important. According to the Buddha, what he actually taught the living being, he said, this so-called meditation that he is teaching is none other than the Noble Eightfold Path, or what he called the Fourth Noble Truth. This Fourth Noble Truth is the most important, because under the Four Noble Truths that he has taught you all, the living being, he said, this is the path that will lead to the cessation of all suffering. Whatever human pain, human sorrow, human unhappiness, if you develop this cultivation of the Noble Eightfold Path, it will cease to be. Then your life will be very happy, very virtuous, very peaceful, and full of wisdom. That is what the Buddha's message is. That's why under the Four Noble Truths, he actually, because of his perfection and wisdom, because of his very special nature, he is called the Sammasambuddha, with all the great virtue that he has actually developed through his practice and cultivation for a very, very long time. Because of that, he got this nine virtue that we just chanted just now. Ittipeso bhagava arahang sama sambuddho. Such indeed is the blessed one, the worthy one, and the full enlightened one. And because of that, he has got all this nine virtue. And because of that, he is the teacher of man and God. He is the guide, incomparable, as far as training of the living being to develop this meditation. So because of that, he is very unique and very special. And he is endowed with all the wisdom, all the virtue, and all the perfection. That makes him very, very special. And we can summarize as the Buddha is the wisest and the most virtuous living being, not only human being, ever to be born during his time. Throughout the entire existence, there is no other being that is of equal to him, unless that being is also a Sammasambuddha. Okay? And because of that, he taught these four truths that are very, very important to the living being. First, he said, this is the noble truth of dukkha. He explained, he proclaimed what dukkha is, the eight types of dukkha that are ever ready to confront the living being. If you do not have the wisdom and understanding born of this meditative training, born of this cultivation of the Noble Eightfold Path, when you are confronted with the eight types of dukkha, which he proclaimed as birth, old age, suffering, and death, that will lead to pain and unhappiness if you don't have the understanding. Then when you have this separation from your loved one, separation can come about in many ways. Divorce is one of them. Then separation through accident, death, and all those things. Or through natural disaster. Or nowadays, sometimes, it may be through certain happenings. Like all those that occur during what they call snatch thief incident, robbery, and all sorts of maybe possibility, including kidnapping and all those things. It can lead to separation of loved one. Then when you are with people whom you don't like, the Buddha say, the same thing can happen. It can be very painful. Life can be very, very what they call full of unpleasantness, full of sorrow and lamentation. Then the seven one, most people will realize that when you are not able to get what one desire, dukkha will follow. Unhappiness will follow. Your like and dislike will arise. Then the last one, he summarized all of dukkha as your attachment to this five aggregate of form and mind, nama rupa. That one I think we already explained. You need to contemplate, reflect into it to understand it further. Then it will help you a lot in your meditation. Okay? So once you have this noble truth of suffering or dukkha understood, then your life will change. You will understand how all this so-called unhappiness come to be. Then the Buddha go on to the next noble truth. He said, under the second noble truth of dukkha, there is a cause, you see, that leads to all this unhappiness, pain and suffering, or what he called dukkha. And the cause is always craving, born of your ignorance, born of your delusion, born of your wrong view, because you do not have the wisdom, born of meditation, to understand the truth, the reality, so that your views are straight, so that your views are proper, so that it does not lead to all the wrong view that cause you to attach, cling and develop all the pain and unhappiness. Okay? So these two noble truths is very, very important. Once you understand them, you know what dukkha is, you know what the cause is, then you will know how to confront life. You will know how to manage dukkha in a much, much better way than the normal human being who don't understand. That is the purpose of the Buddha's teaching. Then after that, he continued, he said, under the third noble truth, all of suffering, dukkha, can come to an end. He said, cessation of dukkha is possible. Life need not have all this pain, all this sorrow, lamentation, all this grief and suffering, all this unhappiness. Life actually can be very pleasant, full of joy, full of happiness. If you can develop the next one, he said, which the Buddha called the Noble Eightfold Path, the fourth noble truth, he said, there is a path that leads to the cessation of this dukkha, or unhappiness, or pain, or suffering, he said, namely, the Noble Eightfold Path. This is the meditation. So get this understood. If you understood what meditation is, that this meditation is the Noble Eightfold Path, that will bring about the training of the mind to be peaceful, to have this inner peace, to have the stability of mindfulness within, so that you can meditate to understand who you are, what you are, to understand how your form and your mind work, to understand why the Buddha said it is your attachment and the clinging to this five aggregate of form and mind, which he called nama rupa, that will lead to dukkha or suffering. The five aggregate in Pali, the Buddha call it rupa, vedana, sanya, sankara, and vijnana. The English translation is rupa is form. Form got two meaning, very, very important. First is your physical body. This kaya is also a form. This is the first aspect. The second aspect is more important. All of external form that you can see, hear, smell, taste, tactile, feel or touch, and your thought can create. Through this sixth sense door, whatever you come to perceive or you come to know or cognize, that is the external form, the rupa, that you bring into the mind, become the mental rupa, the mental form. That one is very, very important. Just for example, this microphone, the voice that I speak, the vibration, you can perceive it through your seeing consciousness. So this rupa, this microphone, has already arisen through your own mental creation. That seeing consciousness perceive it. So you take that form into the mind. Understand or not? So this is the mental form. That's why every moment of seeing, the seeing consciousness has also the five aggregate of form and mind. Nama rupa. The rupa comes to be through your perception. You take it in through your power of mind to perceive. That aggregate is the one that brings the rupa into the mind. Likewise, my speech. You hear the sound, the vibration. Through your hearing consciousness, you perceive it. That vibration, that sound, that frequency is also a rupa, a form that enters the mind. Okay? Then similarly, you have your smell, your taste, your tactile, and your consciousness, or your mind. Okay. After that, the Buddha said, the next aggregate is feeling. Your mind can arise the feeling aggregate. It can cause you to feel things, pleasant, unpleasant. All the possibility of feeling. You can feel the hot and the cold. You can feel the pleasantness and the unpleasantness. And you can feel certain type of state, mental states or emotion. Sometimes good meditation, you got this joyful feeling, the blissful feeling. Sometimes you have this pain, you have the painful feeling. All these are what the Buddha called Vedana or feeling aggregate. If you attach to any of these feelings, suffering will follow you. They are natural occurrences. There are causes and conditions behind their arising. So you meditate to understand all this. Similarly, everything you come to perceive, either through your seeing, hearing, smell, taste, tactile, or your thought process, they are also not to be attached. If you do not have the right view, you think they are very real, you think they are very, very important, then you develop the wrong view to attach, to cling, and try to own. That's how suffering comes to be. That's how it torments you. When you cannot get what you want, then you have problem. Then all the unhappiness will arise. Likewise, the third aggregate of mind, the Buddha calls sankhara, or your activity of mind, all your thinking process, all your views and your opinion, you cannot cling, you cannot hold on to it. If you hold on to it, suffering will follow you. Always remember that. Whatever you try to hold, cling and own, that is your craving, because you want it that way. You desire, you have this desire or selfishness. Then the last one is consciousness. Everything that you become conscious of through your sense door, either seeing consciousness, hearing consciousness, smell, taste, tactile, or thought consciousness, if you do not have the wisdom, you think they are very real, like what the Buddha said. It's like a magician that create the illusion to delude you, to cause you to have the wrong view, to attach and cling to them. Then suffering will follow. Okay? This five aggregate is very, very important. Okay? So when you understand them, you will actually meditate a lot better. If you cannot understand this five aggregate of form and mind, then it's very difficult to understand the first noble truth that the Buddha proclaimed. Because under the final summary, he summarized all of dukkha as your attachment to this five aggregate of form and mind that he called upadana khandas. So this is why it is so important. Okay? Our purpose of meditation is to develop this understanding through our cultivation of the Noble Eightfold Path. Especially the seven power factor of samasati, or what they call right mindfulness. Without this right mindfulness, to develop the four foundation of mindfulness as taught by the Buddha, in Pali it is called the Satipatthana. Okay? The Satipatthana practice is the most important. And without this sati or mindfulness, you cannot meditate. Because this is the first, what they call, factor of enlightenment that is needed to start, to commence the practice. And without this sati, not only you don't have the factor of enlightenment, you can't even be heedful, where you have not trained your mind to be mindful. That is the reason why meditation involves the initial training of the mind to be centered so that it does not wander, so that it can be mindful. When you have trained your mind to have that ability, then that mindfulness will be the beginning of heedfulness, or what they call appamada. And when you have that, if you can carry that to the daily life, your meditation will improve very, very fast. Then you will be able to understand what the Buddha is trying to teach you. And there is a lot of joy that comes with it. Huh? When you have that, you will move forward very, very fast. Because piti is also another factor of enlightenment. Then when you understand that this way is so beautiful, the teachings of the Buddha is so beautiful, your faith become very strong, your saddha become very strong, then it will arise a type of energy you call virya. This is also a factor of enlightenment that can make you enlightened. And this virya is like a zeal, Z-E-A-L. It makes you very interested in the meditation. You will have this very strong, what they call energy or intention to meditate, to develop this path, where you know this is the way that can free you. This is the way that can make you happy. This is the way that can make you peaceful and enlightened. That is the reason why the Buddha said these teachings, the Four Noble Truths, are very important, with particular emphasis on the Fourth Noble Truth, Noble Eightfold Path. This is what the meditation is all about. So to summarize, whatever you do to develop this so-called meditative practice, if it can bring about the fulfillment of this Noble Eightfold Path, it is the right meditation. That's why you need to check whatever meditation that people teach you. Don't worry about the technique, method, or the teacher. Those are irrelevant. If you have the wisdom to know what is meditation, you know that meditation involves the Noble Eightfold Path. Meditation requires what they call mindfulness to start. Then, very easy for you to meditate. Wherever you go, who the teacher is, what method or technique they teach you, not important. You will know how to develop your own understanding. You can try whatever they teach you, no harm. If it's the correct one, you will know how to do it. Sometime, if you have the understanding and the wisdom, you will be able to develop the practice until you have the wisdom and realization. Whereas the person who started it may not understand. The difference is, you know what is meditation. When you know what is meditation, anything can be meditated on. Do you understand? But when you don't know what is meditation, you have a lot of problems. Then you will worry about which method to follow, which technique to follow, which teacher to follow, how to do it, all the instructions. You have a lot of doubt. When you have doubt, it's a mental hindrance. Then you lack faith. Then your mind, every time, reactive. And because of that, very difficult to develop the practice and the meditation. Because of that, a lot of people doesn't really progress. When they go for retreat, when they go for meditation, they just repeat what people tell them to do without the proper understanding, without the proper foundation to know what is meditation. That's why today I emphasize this again so that it will help you. Okay? I summarize again. The real meditation, Noble Eightfold Path, whatever that can bring about this fulfillment is the right meditation. Then to start the meditation, you must be able to train your mind to be mindful. Once you are mindful with the inner awareness, with the inner peace, you can develop the appamada or the heedfulness. That is the one that leads to the cultivation of the four foundations of mindfulness or the satipatthana. Through that practice and cultivation, you will develop all the other Noble Eightfold Path factors. You will know what right view is. Then you will be able to constantly arise the right effort to check your thoughts, whether the thought that arises in you throughout the day, whether you are in the formal meditation or not, are they the right thought? If they are not the right thought, you need to be very careful. Because the Buddha, very clearly under the Dhammapada, verse 1 and 2, I have to repeat this. He warned the living being. He said, if you want to have happy life, you must do according to verse 2 of the Dhammapada say. If you don't, if you neglect yourself, if you do all the negativity or the unwholesome action, speech and thought, then verse 1 will take its course. Then your life will be full of pain and suffering. Okay? Because under these two verses, the Buddha said, under verse 1, he said, mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is chief, he said. Everything arises from the mind. So that very important message of the Buddha is to tell you that the mind is very, very important. You have to take care of the mind. If you don't know how to take care of your mind, you will have a lot of problems in life. Then under the verse 1, he said, if you speak, act, and think with the unwholesome thought or unwholesome mind, or a wicked mind that has all the greed, the selfishness, the ill will, and the delusion. He used this very strong word. He said, suffering will follow you, like the wheel that follow the hoof. If you don't want to have that, avoid all evil. Okay? Make sure your thought is free of the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, so that dukkha need not arise. Okay? Whereas the second verse is the same. He repeated, mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is chief. Everything arises from the mind. And mind is very important. So he said, if you have this wisdom and right view with regards to the law of karma, he said, if you speak, act, and think with a wholesome mind, with a pure mind, with a good mind, with goodness of heart, then he used the word happiness, he said, will follow you like your shadow that never leaves you. If you truly understand these two verses of the Dhammapada, you will be very careful about your thought. That is how you develop your practice, your meditation. In life itself, constantly check your thought. Whatever negativity, unwholesome thought, cut it off. If it has arisen, abandon it. If it has yet to arise, prevent it from arising. Use the right effort to do it. But you need the sati to see your thought, the mindfulness. Without mindfulness, you cannot understand what is going on. That's why you fail to see. But when you have the mindfulness, you will be able to check. And when you have this negativity, use the right effort to prevent it from arising, or abandon it all. Then the other two right effort is to develop the wholesome thought. Develop the metta, loving kindness more and more, the compassion more and more, the equanimous mind more and more, the sympathetic joy more and more, so as to cut away all the negativity, like hatred. If you have metta, loving kindness, you cannot have the hatred. If you have the compassion, you cannot have the cruelty. You have this sympathetic joy, or what they call mudita. You cannot have the envy and the jealousy. When you have this equanimous mind, you do not react to all the sense experience anymore. Your like and dislike will start to fade away. All your wrong view will start to fade away. Okay? Then develop all the virtue, all the goodness, all your kindness, generosity, your gentleness, your pleasantness, your patience, your contentment, your gratitude, your honesty, all this wholesomeness, develop and cultivate them with the right effort, more and more, more and more. Then if there is anything that is already in you, the goodness, sometimes you are by nature very generous, very helpful. The Buddha said, use the right effort to promote this further, refine upon it, develop it further, until it become more and more virtuous, more and more perfect. This is how you train yourself. Okay? Okay, with this, I think I will end. You can start your meditation now. I think the usual instruction is still the same. Relax your body and mind. I don't have to repeat that. You know how to do it. Just relax your body and mind. Okay? Have a posture that is very stable, that will enable you to sit for at least 45 minutes to an hour, depending on the time. I will see how, at least 45 minutes. If there are conditions for people to sit, I will extend it to about an hour, because we have the time today. Okay? After your body and mind are relaxed, then you develop this training of the mind. Whatever meditation object that you have, use that to anchor your mind. Every time the mind wanders off, bring it back. If you don't have any meditation object, I would suggest you try your breath, the breathing. That is the easiest to develop, because your breath is always with you. It is always within the moment. It is very prominent. So just develop this ability to be mindful of the breath, the in and out breath. Just aware, mindful. Try not to think. Every time the thought comes, tell the mind, I want to meditate. I will think about it later. Let things be. Then go back to your breathing. Go back to your object of meditation. If you are used to some of the mantra, you can also use. If you are used to starting with loving kindness before you start your meditation, you can also use it. Metta helps to settle down the mind too. Those who can develop other techniques or methods, even the one I think Cindy is trying to develop through the Long Po Tien one, also it will work. The hand movement, it will develop your sati if you need to do it. Whatever that can bring about mindfulness and the training of the mind, you can meditate on it. Okay, you can start your meditation now. Now we will continue with the second session. Normally, this will be a reporting session. But before I start, is there anybody who has any question? Maybe any question on the meditation or the Dhamma or anything you want to understand? We can talk about that first. Anybody? If not, then I think we'll start the... yes. Correct. Very, very good. Who told you that? Very good. That is the correct statement. You must have the right view. Because if your view is not right, your thought will follow your view. Understand? When you don't have the right view and the right understanding, you cannot meditate. Well, you don't know what is meditation. You don't know what is the right view with regards to certain very important nature's law. Understand? Right view is very, very important. The samadhi is the first path factor. If your view is wrong, your thought will be wrong. When your thoughts are wrong, thought has mental intention as the base. It will condition your speech, action, and livelihood also to be wrong. That's a right view is very important. But it doesn't mean that you don't have the right view, you cannot start to meditate. No. You can still start to meditate. But as you meditate, if you have the right understanding of what is going on through your meditation, then your right view will come about through your actual seeing, through your actual understanding, born of your practice. The initial right view is still not stable, not strong, because you only read about it, or you have only been told about it, and you have not cultivated it. But when you have cultivated this right view, then it becomes a part of you. You become very serious about what you believe in, just like right view with regards to the law of karma. A lot of people say, oh, they know, law of karma. Do good begets good, do evil begets evil. You reap what you sow. That is only knowing, knowledge, not cultivated yet. That's why under the Four Noble Truths, I taught you about the three turnings. Under the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, I think the Buddha taught that. He himself said, even he as a Sammasambuddha, he said it. When he was the Buddha to be, he need to understand this Four Noble Truths in its three turning. Since there are four truths, four times three, the 12 mode, Not until he has understood them in this three turning and this 12 mode, he cannot proclaim to be the Buddha or the Sammāsambuddha. So you see the importance of this three turning. So under the fourth noble truth, the first turning he always proclaimed the noble truth. The noble truth of the path that leads to the cessation of dukkha. But under the second turning, he said, this noble eightfold path is to be, what is it? Huh? No, not understand. Understanding is not enough. Understand is for the first noble truth. When he proclaimed the first noble truth, he said, this noble truth of dukkha is such and such and such. He proclaimed the eight type of dukkha. Then under the second turning of the first noble truth, he said, this noble truth of dukkha is to be understood. The first noble truth, you understand it, is enough. But when it comes to the fourth noble truth, understanding it is not enough, the Buddha said. That's why under the second turning, he said, this you have to check whether it is only knowledge or whether you have really cultivated. When you have cultivated, it means it's inside you, it's a part of you. You believe in the law of karma. You know karma is very important. You know you are born of your karma, conditioned and supported by your karma. You inherit all your karma, is it? And you are what you are because of your karma. That's why you cannot blame anybody for what happened to you in your life. And because of that, you have the wisdom. You will know how to take care of your karma. Your karma is the one that conditions your life, understand that? You are born of that. If you don't take care of your karma, your birth will be very miserable. Then you are conditioned and supported by that. Your life will be very miserable too if you don't have that good karma. Then you inherit everything that your karma brings about. So you don't take care of your karma, whatever you inherit are all the negativity that brings about pain and suffering. That's why this match exactly with the first two verses of the Buddha that I explained just now. If you don't take care of your karma, it will be like verse 1. Suffering will follow you, like the wheel that follow the hood. Understand that? But you take care of your karma, this is right view, then happiness will follow you like your shadow that never leaves you. So what is it that you want in life? You ask yourself, you want happiness, peace and wisdom, or you want suffering, pain and unhappiness? Ask yourself. That's why you must have this right view. Even this right view with regards to karma is so powerful. When you really mean it, when you really cultivate this right view, it is very powerful. First, you know how to follow the advice of all the Buddhas. You know how to avoid evil to good. Correct or not? Because you know the importance of karma. So you have to take care of your karma. How do you take care of your karma? Avoid evil, isn't it? Do good. And that's the advice of all the Buddha. After that, purify your mind or meditate. Understand or not? That's why in Pali, because this verse is very important, the Buddha spoke this. Actually, it was Ananda at that time who asked this question to the Buddha on behalf of all the other bhikkhu who were very curious. They want to know, does all Sammāsambuddha, when they arise, teach the same thing? What's your understanding? Do they teach the same thing? Yes. That's how this verse come. The Buddha say, yes, they teach the same thing. They only teach this, he say. Listen, he say. Sabba papasa akaranang kusalesa upasampadan, he say. Sacitta pariyodappanang etang buddhana sasana. The meaning is, sabba papasa. Sabba is all. Pavasa. All evil is to be avoided. Understand? Then kusalesa upasambada means all the kusala, all the meritorious action, the goodness, all the good
meritorious speech or action or whatever, merits that you can develop and cultivate them. Avoid all evil. Do good. Then purify your mind. You see, all the Buddha throughout the three period of time teaches the same thing. So when you have this right view, properly cultivated in regards to the law of karma, you will definitely understand the advice of the Buddha and you will know how to do it. But there is a second thing that comes with this right view with regards to the law of karma. This part a lot of people don't understand. You see, when you have this right view with regards to the law of karma, you will come to understand each and every one of the living beings, they have their own karma. There are causes and conditions behind that cause them to be what they are. It is conditioned and supported by their karma. So when you are confronted with the first noble truth, especially old age, sickness and death, or separation from loved one, or when you are with people whom you don't like, or when you cannot get what one desires, then the Buddha's teaching becomes very, very clear. Because you have this right view with regards to law of karma. Let's say death occur, or very serious terminal disease occur. It can be to your loved one or whatever, or whatever thing that leads to misery, separation and all those things. But if you have right view with regards to karma, you know what will happen to you. You accept what happened because you know each and every one of them had their karma. When it's time to be sick, they will be sick. It's time to die, they will die. When time to separate, you will separate. So because of that, this right view will enable you to accept things as they are, see things as they are. When you are able to have that right view, your wisdom is very powerful. But this will prevent you from developing the wrong view to attach and to cling. That very acceptance frees you. That very acceptance with the right view will be able to cut away all the craving and desire that you want. If you don't have that right view, you will lament. You will be very, very unhappy. Sometimes you blame yourself for not doing enough. Sometimes you blame others for causing the death and all those things. But all these are not the reality, the Buddha said. If you have right view with regards to karma, you will come to terms with everything that happened. Then that wisdom of accepting what had already happened. There are things that already happened you cannot change. There are causes and conditions behind their arising. So whatever happened, you have to have the wisdom to come to terms with that reality. Accept it first. Then do the best you can to ease the situation. Develop the Noble Eightfold Path factor to help people, to help yourself, and to help all those that you need help. Through this, you will not blame, you will not lament, you will not create all the remorse and all the negativity that leads to all the wrong thought that will condition the suffering, the depression, and the unhappiness. Do you understand? Because this is very important. When you don't have that right view to accept things as they are, your mind creates a lot of negativity. Then if you don't have the mindfulness to check with the right effort, all your thoughts are wrong thoughts. You hardly have any right thought. That's why the real meditation is to inquire honestly throughout the day. Every moment in life when you are conscious, you need to arise your thought. What's the nature of your thought? How often are they filled with all the wholesome thought? Thought that are free from selfishness, greed, desire, aversion, unhappiness, like and dislike, delusion. You check. The human being is full of greed, I tell you. That's why the Buddha said the living being a lot of ignorant. At first I can't understand that statement about 30 over years ago, because that time, being a student, I did very well academically. Then when I went to the uni, I also did very well. I have this understanding. Hey, we are educated. How can the Buddha say we are ignorant? At first I can't understand. But later I start to develop the practice and the cultivation further, especially when I realize the sati or the mindfulness. Then I start to see my thought. Then I saw all the mental intention. I say, no wonder the Buddha said the living being is full of delusion, ignorant. Because every intention that I arise, almost 90% at that time, got selfishness behind. Nothing to do with me, I don't want to do. No advantage, I don't want to do. The living being, all your action and decision is based on whether it will benefit me or my family or my career or what. Then only you do, understand? Whether there is any advantage, then only you do. You always think of all these advantages and disadvantages. That's what selfishness is. Seldom do you have a moment where you are very sincere and very kind to help people without ulterior motive. Do you understand that? How often does the living being really practice right thought, wholesome thought, free of greed, selfishness, and ulterior motive? You do because you want to help people. Out of love and compassion, you really want to help. How often do you have that type of thought? Maybe once a while when you see somebody very old or maybe in certain type of difficulty, then some compassion arise, then you want to help. But again, the thought will come, should I go and interfere? Why? All this will dialogue inside your mind. Then you say, I better don't. Otherwise, I will bring about a lot of trouble. Especially road accident and all those things. All of you, better don't get involved. Too messy. See? When it comes to your own loved one, when it comes to somebody that you know very close, then naturally you do. Why? Selfishness. Because your loved one only you do, not your loved one you don't want to do. Understand? Huh? Because everything is based on benefit. That is selfishness. Sometimes very subtle, you don't see. Seldom do you have a thought where you really radiate out the metta, the loving. You really wish people well and happy very sincerely. That's why even a lot of meditators, I think last week when we were at BGF, there was one meditator. I think he is not here today. I think Brother Chiu. He said when he do the metta, he still find it difficult to radiate to the enemy, people whom he don't like. He said just cannot, not natural. See? So difficult for the mind to let go of that anger, unhappiness, that hatred, that aversion. Seldom do you have the pure mind. Mind that is free of greed, hatred and delusion. Mind that is without selfishness and desire and craving. Very seldom. That is right view. But not necessarily like what people think. You must have all the right view, then only you can start meditating. No. It's essential to know certain things. Then you start your practice. As you start your practice and cultivation, through your meditation, through your cultivation, you will start to understand a lot of things. Then you will experience it. Then through that, your faith becomes stronger. It will refine your right view to be more and more straight, more and more firm and stable. Then with that refined right view, your meditation will progress very much faster. It will bring about a higher level of more refined heedfulness and apamada. When you have the understanding already, your right view becomes very strong already, then everything you do will actually come to a very, very much refined level that will make you progress very fast along the path and cultivation. The human beings seldom have that opportunity to develop themselves because they lack this right view. They lack this cultivation to allow them to see how the nature's law actually comes about, how you witness the law of karma, the law of cause and effect happening within your life, how you witness the dependent origination arising and passing away within your form and your mind, how you realize the Four Noble Truths within your own life, how you see happening to other people. Through all this, your wisdom will grow, your faith will be very, very strong. Then your right view or right understanding will develop to another level that will enable you to actually stabilize that right view, that will bring about a more refined type of right view that enable you to develop your practice further. Okay? Does that answer your question? Sadhu. Any other question? Yeah, Ching Ching. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Good. I will explain to you, because this happened to a lot of meditators. You all should thank Ching Ching. Because actually a lot of meditators don't understand what is going on. You see, according to her, the question is very good. She said, what I explained just now was, after you meditate, you start to understand, then your right view become more and more refined and more developed. But she realized from her own experience, when she start to meditate, she see more and more defilement inside her. So she thought, that is the one that caused her to actually deteriorate. Instead of making her wiser, she start to see this negativity. Okay, I will explain it. It brings about a good condition to explain, because it's a long time since I never touched on this subject. I remember 20-30 years ago when I went for a retreat, I always heard all these people say, that's why when you don't understand, then a lot of things you do based on the wrong understanding, lack of this right view and right understanding, the meditation actually become a problem. You see, what happened was, I explained yours first. Not to say this defilement was not with you before you meditate. Actually, they are all there. But before you meditate, you can't see them. You are less mindful. You have not been told about it. But after you start to develop the meditation, then you start to see all these things. It's just like what I told you. At first, I don't believe what the Buddha said. He said, living beings are full of ignorant avijja. I say, how can? A lot of us are graduates. Some are PhD holders. How can you say they are ignorant? But when I saw my own mind, like I saw yours, full of greed, full of selfishness, seldom do I have a moment of pure thought. That's why you read the Mahayana teaching. One moment of pure thought. You know what that merit is? Higher than the seven treasures that you can find in the entire universe. If you offer all those seven treasures, the merits cannot compare to a moment of pure thought. See how powerful the merit is. How difficult is it to have a pure thought? A thought that is really free of greed, hatred and delusion without craving. So what happens is, when you have this ability to see, you're supposed to awaken to it, that you have all this defilement because you don't have the right view and right understanding. That's why you cannot arise the right thought, where you still have not cultivated the law of the right view with regards to the law of karma. You still do not fear karma. See? When you see all this, then you tell yourself, oh, no wonder my life is like that. This will condition all the negativity. But when you check back, sometimes you do have certain good moments in your life. Sometimes certain things are more fortunate for you as compared to a lot of people who are a lot more less fortunate and a lot more miserable. It's because in your past,
you have developed certain goodness, certain wholesomeness. That's why when you calm this life, you have the good condition to encounter the Buddha Dharma, and you have the good condition to be a Buddhist who wants to develop this practice and cultivate. And this don't come by accident. It is born of your past. Because of that, you actually are already very fortunate, able to have the condition to be born during the Buddha Sasana, where the teachings are still around, where the Triple Gem is still around. And also you have this good condition to be a Buddhist this life, or to have the condition to actually cultivate this noble truth as taught by the Buddha, and to develop the meditation. And this is really something that is very, very rare. According to the Buddha, to be born as a human being already rare enough. To have the condition to encounter the Buddha Sasana is even more rare. Then to have the condition to be born during the Buddha Sasana, to have the condition to be a Buddhist, to develop this practice and culture, is even more rare. Understand? So because of that, we should actually rejoice, count our blessing, then develop this faith and understanding to make use of this condition to develop the meditation, so that we can develop the enlightenment here and now if possible. Even if we don't succeed completely, we will make sure that the causes and conditions that we plant this life will ensure our future will be taken care of, so that we will not have to worry about our future life. A lot of meditators who enters the retreat center, you see, what the Buddha has taught is especially the precept. I want to talk about the precept. This precept is very, very important to the cultivator or to the meditator. But if you violate this precept, it's just like you violate all the right speech, right action, and right thought. Because your precept has this treating to guide you. Okay? If you break your first precept, you kill, you harm. The second precept, you steal. You take things that don't belong to you. You have this thought of deceiving people, cheating people. Then you commit sexual misconduct. Then you tell a lot of lies, a lot of improper speeches that can bring about a lot of misunderstanding, cause a lot of enmity, cause a lot of disharmony. All this is very negative. Then you take intoxicant that can make your consciousness very low, to make you make mistakes. All this the Buddha already knew. That's why he formulated the precept for you to actually understand that if you abide by it, you abstain from all this negativity, then it will bring about a type of peace within your mind so that you can meditate. If you don't take care of your precept, very difficult to meditate. Because when you violate any of these five precepts, you will have a lot of problem in life. The society's law will come after you. People whom you violate through the breaking of the precept will also develop the unhappiness and the hatred to deal with you, to come back and take revenge on you, or to do a lot of things. Because whatever you do, the action will result in a type of reaction. So when you have this understanding, you will naturally take care of your precept. But when a lot of meditator, or what I should say practitioner, when they develop this cultivation of taking care of the precept, they do not understand. According to the Buddha, if you read the precept, he always say, abstain. The Buddha always used the way, we choose abstain from killing. He never said, thou shalt not kill. There is a lot of difference there. Abstain from killing means do not arise the intention to kill or cause harm and all those things. So what does this mean? It is to help you in your cultivation. It is to help you in your practice. Because when you have that understanding, you will develop the right mindfulness, the right effort to be careful about your action, your speech, and your thought. Then only you won't break those precepts. Understand? That's how the precept actually assists you in your cultivation. But what happened is a lot of people enters the retreat. After they meditate, they can see their thought. Then they say, oh my God, I got a lot of this defiling thought. Then a lot of remorse. Then they feel guilty. Then they are not qualified to meditate. Then they go and tell the fellow colleagues, "Ayo, today I cannot meditate. I have this dirty thought." or I have break this precept. Then they recall, the Buddha never tell you to do all this. The Buddha asks you to live the moment in heedfulness and awareness and mindfulness, not to remorse over the past, to be with the moment and check your thought, to develop the mindfulness to be careful about what you do, your action, your speech, and your thought. Mental intention, very important. That's why if you don't have the right understanding, you do the wrong thing, then your mind, a lot of doubt, a lot of worry, a lot of restlessness. These are all hindrances of the mind. You cannot meditate. Understand not? Like the Buddha said, past already gone, let things be. Whatever happened will have to happen in the moment. And the moment is very important. Moment to moment, life passes by. Everything that arises exists only in the moment. But that is the only reality in life. The past is already gone, not a reality. Future yet to come is also not a reality. The moment is the only reality. Okay? Moment to moment, life passes by. What are you doing? That's why the Buddha said you have to be mindful of the moment. That's what heedfulness is all about. That's what sati is all about. That's what mindfulness is all about. Are you mindful of the moment? If you are mindful of the moment, you are truly living. You are truly within the moment. And that is what meditation is all about. Not to allow your thought to run to the future and the past. When it's in the future, you know what will happen? A lot of fear, a lot of anxiety will arise. Because you project into the future. You ask, what will happen if then that thing happened? Or when that court case come to be? You project your mind so far. Or tomorrow, you have to maybe meet your boss. Oh, what will happen? Or you got certain assignment deadline, you project. It will lead to a lot of fear, a lot of anxiety. Then you no longer have this confidence in you because your thought create all this. Then when you think of the past, what happened? It brings about a lot of remorse, unhappiness, because you always think of the fearful thing that happened. The unpleasant thing that happened. Because that is the one that haunted you. That creates so much attachment for you to cling on to. Because it has caused a lot of what they call very sort of, especially those who went through very bad childhood experiences. Child abuse and all those things. Or you met with certain type of unpleasant incidences or event that caused your life to be very traumatic. That thought constantly come back to you. That's why you don't understand your mind. Very difficult to have good life, happy life. Because thought condition feeling, feeling condition your emotion. That's why you must have the wisdom to constantly understand right thought. Right thought will condition the right feeling, the good feeling. They will condition the good emotion. That will bring about the peace and the happiness. Wrong thought will condition the negative emotion, the fear, the anxiety, the unhappiness, the sorrow and the lamentation. And this is the one that makes you very depressed, very negative. That's why if you understand how your mind works, you will appreciate a lot what the Buddha has taught you. You will have a lot of gratitude. Then you will really have the faith in what he has taught you. Then life can be very, very beautiful, very, very pleasant, very happy, free of dukkha. Then when you know how to develop this Noble Eightfold Path, you will have the right view to condition the right thought, to arise constantly the right and wholesome thought that will make you very noble, very virtuous, make your karma very, very good. That it will condition your speech to be very pleasant, very gentle, very wholesome. And that speeches that will bring about a lot of happiness, a lot of harmony, a lot of what they call joy. Huh? That will bring about a lot of what they call, I think more towards harmony. Harmony and peace. Huh? That will make your life very, very good, very happy. Huh? Instead of the negativity, when you don't have the right speech, you have to be very careful. Because a lot of family get into a lot of problem because they lack right speech. And when you get into problem with your neighbor also, very likely is because of your wrong speech. When you cannot get along with your mother-in-law, also because of your wrong speech. When you cannot get along with your colleague, your fellow brothers and sisters, check, always your wrong speech. If you have this goodness of heart, you have this compassion and loving kindness, when your speech is developed in accordance with what the Buddha has taught you, very gentle, very pleasant, and very, very good, with a lot of wisdom in it, then your life will be very good. Then there will be a lot of harmony within your family unit. There will be a lot of love within your family unit. Then your children will like you. Your wife, your spouse will like you. Then you all will live together in a very harmonious way, a very, very peaceful way. This is how the Noble Eightfold Path can transform you personally, then transform your family unit, then transform your life, so that your relationship with people, if you have this Noble Eightfold Path, people will like you, people will love you. Then you will have this wisdom to actually help a lot of people. That will bring about what the world needs. All the peace, all the happiness, all the joy, especially loving kindness and compassion, which the world really, nowadays, I think, very difficult to find. The living being actually lack love, lack compassion, very, very lack. Okay. That's why nowadays, if you were to check the newspaper, almost every day you see the headline, a lot of violence, a lot of terrorism, a lot of so-called killing, murder, kidnap, all the negativities, so rampant. It's as if it has become a lot more worse. We're supposed to live in a world that is very much more civilized. They call it the 21st century, with a lot of education, with a lot of understanding. But why are we still having all this? Because the living beings still have a lot of wrong view, wrong understanding. They still cling on to their race, their religion, their belief. And they do not understand that humanity is one. And because of that, they cling to their identity, the ego, their belief, their religion. And in the name of religion, in the name of their race, they fight. In the name of their country, they attack, conquer. And they create all this. All in the name of religion. And sometimes, born of selfishness. Mainly, it arises due to ignorance, because you don't have the right view. That's why you have this ignorance. You think you exist. And when you think you exist, the ego becomes very strong. Then the ego develops the views. This view is the one that causes a lot of problems. Then you have wrong view with regards to what religion is all about. Religion has a very noble purpose, to teach the living being to be very, very, what they call, loving, virtuous and peaceful. Not to teach the living being all the negativity, to fight, to develop the violence, to develop the anger, the hatred. It's completely reverse of what the religious teacher had taught them. in the name of religion, they created all this misunderstanding and confrontation. That's why if we really truly want to repay the Buddha for what he has taught us, then, like the Buddha say, he who sees his teaching, the Dhamma, sees him. That will make you very close to him. And he actually, before he died, he even actually told the bhikkhu, be diligent, he said. Develop this cultivation. Realize the Dhamma soon as possible so that it can free you. Very important. Okay. Any other question? If not, we can start the reporting. We got about 40 minutes. Okay, today, who wants to report first? Anybody need to go off early? Cheng Hun? Because... No, never mind. Your posture, where you put your leg in front, so it's not so stable. But never mind. The more important thing is, can you develop the faith like last time you did? Very strong faith when you are in Kottak Dhammansara. Very strong faith. Then put your hand like that. But today I don't see you put your hand. Oh. Never mind, your leg can be straight. But put your hand like that because it will bring forth the energy inside. Then that faith will stabilize you. Then when you are able to be calm, then you won't move. When you are not calm, you move. Are you sleepy a bit today? I saw a little bit. Certain time when I check, I saw you like want to doze off. Yeah, it's okay because you need to train this mind. Train it so that it can become peaceful. When it does not wander around, when it does not think so much, then it becomes very peaceful. I know, but your mind wanders off. You didn't know. I know. Because before it dozes off, it wanders off first. If not, you won't doze off. Because the thought, your energy not there to be mindful. Understand or not? Then when your energy not there to be mindful, what the mind do, you doesn't know. It has a, what they call, a hell of a day. It take you around without you even aware of it. Where your energy level very low, you hardly mindful. It's just like daydreaming. Understand? But sometimes when you have this mindfulness within, the mind cannot do all those. The hindrances of mind cannot arise. Because that mindfulness is the one that stabilizes the mind to be in the meditative state. When you are not mindful, your mind think a lot. Then the hindrances take over. I know. You initially, when you start to meditate, you already have that what I call resolve not to think. You just want to meditate. But after a while, you don't know. But this mind run very fast. Very, very fast. You check again next time. It moves very fast. Then when it start to, your body start to move, actually your mind also moving. If not, your body won't move. When you are very quiet, very still, your mind can still move. But in that quietness, you will know because you have the awareness and mindfulness. But when you are not quiet, when you are with a lot of agitation, then you cannot see. Your mindfulness not there. So most of the time, it is the state of mind that condition your body. When you are not peaceful and not calm, your body will move. When you are peaceful and calm, your body will be very quiet, very still. Don't worry. Try it a few more times. Develop the resolve to develop this practice. It will come back to you. You have done it before, I believe. That's why you have the resolve. When you saw your mother, it reminds you, you must meditate. how you do it when you start. How you develop the cultivation just now, the 45 minutes. Yeah, I know. You use the mantra. That is the one that's supposed to anchor your mind. It's like any meditation object. When you are with that mantra, your thought doesn't run, understand? You anchor it on something. It's just like those who do the Mahayana practice. They use the word Namo Kwan Sing Pusa or Namo Amitabha Buddha, Amitabha, Amitabha. They just chant. Sometimes they use the beat to arise the feeling, the touch. Then sometimes they also, in Thailand, they always use the word Buddha, Buddha, Buddha. Remind them of the Buddha. So they anchor their mind there so that it does not wander, so that the mind can be trained to be single-mindedly mindful of the Buddha's name. Or like your case, you have that mantra, Namo Oni, what? Horang Keko, yes. Yes, yes. Develop that, because that is the faith that will bring forth the training of the mind. Where you are used to that and it has affinity with you, so use it. Then after you chant that, when you repeat it until your mind become like the mind and the chanting become one, understand? Like nobody is chanting, the mind and the chanting become one, that is the real one. Then you become very peaceful, very quiet, very calm. But when you still use your thought to chant, use your mind to chant, then you will not be calm and peaceful. You chant until the chanting like natural, it arises by itself. The mind and the word as one. That time very peaceful. Very, very peaceful. Then you will enter into a type of calmness. During that time, your mindfulness is there. Your mind and the mantra as one. Very clear. The clarity is there. Are you able to retain that training of the mind to be with that mantra or that chanting that you are having? For how long? Yeah, I know. Because when it goes in, it will be like what happened at Kottadama. You become very still, a lot of joy, very calm. Don't worry, because this place, actually the energy also very good. But maybe you are not used to the environment. Maybe you like the big Buddha image. That one gives you a lot of faith. Because we were doing it at Jenny's house in Kottadama. The monk from Thailand, he brought along a Buddha Rupang. You know how big that Buddha Rupang is? Taller than me when I stand up. Very big, into a double-story residential house. And that Buddha Rupang got a lot of energy. That's why when she there, she got this faith. And she feel very good, she can meditate there. But here also, the energy is very good. But you must have the faith. Buddha Rupang small, don't worry. Yeah, I know. Yes. Then develop that resolve strongly. Recall to mind all the Buddha's teaching. Then develop that faith. You say, I determine to meditate. I determine to understand this meditation so that I can have the wisdom to free. So that I can develop the right understanding to cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path, leading to enlightenment. So that you can understand yourself very clearly. Then life become very simple, very easy, very happy, free of all the negativity and unhappiness. Then all your thought will be very, very virtuous, right thought, without all the unwholesome thought, without all the negativity of selfishness, greed and delusion. Then it will transform you. Then every time you arise your speech, check. Is it the proper speech that will bring about harmony, that will bring about peace and happiness? That type of what I should say, right effort to constantly check yourself in daily life, very important. Check your thought, check your speech, check your action. Yeah, more towards the real thing. Because if your thought is not in accordance with what the Buddha has taught you, it will condition all the negativity of speech, action and livelihood. Because thought has mental intention behind. If your thought has this selfishness behind, then that is the wrong thought that will condition a lot of action and speech that is selfish and negative. You see, the thing is like that. When you help, this is a more refined level of selfishness. Just because it's your mother, that relationship, you responded. I have a meditator friend. When it is the brother, sister, or the wife, or the mother, or no, the husband, or the mother, or related one, she can actually sacrifice her life just all out to help, like a bodhisattva. But when it is not related, she cannot do. See? That itself is selfishness. You do because your son, your daughter, understand? Like a lot of mother, they can actually sacrifice. They themselves work very hard, never mind, because they love their children so much. And that is real sacrifice. But there is still selfishness there. Because only because they are related to you, your children, then you can go all out and sacrifice. It's good. Nothing wrong with that. Very wholesome, very noble. But if you can do it to every living being, regardless of whether they are related to you or not, that is the ultimate. Understand? Not? Universal love, compassion. Not because you only love and arise the compassion when they are related to you, when they are your good friend, because you think you own them. Understand? Not? There is a very subtle difference. Because these are very fine level of what I call selfishness. That action that you do actually doesn't have any selfishness. Because you really love your loved one, like your mother, full of compassion. You really want to help her. Very sincere, no doubt about it. But because mother only you do, it's still not a universal love that can extend to all beings, regardless of relationship. Understand? That's why I say there is still a little bit of fine level of selfishness. She must be very old, 93, yeah. The mother, 93. Ah, you go, yeah. The mother already 93, yeah. But you have to come to terms with the reality of life. Like the Buddha said, old age, sickness and death, every living being, every living being must confront. So when you confront them, you will have to have the wisdom and understanding to accept them for what they are. Because your mother has her own karma. Your mother has this, to me, is actually, if let's say, the way I contemplate, if it were to be my parent or what, like my father, although he is not so, maybe, he doesn't live until 93. My father passed away about 2 or 3 years ago, at the age of 80 plus a bit, almost 81. But there's a lot of joy. You know why? Because he was able to have that good life that he wanted to have. Excuse me. And he also able to fulfill a lot of things that he wants to fulfill before he died. A lot of goodness that he wants to do. Then while he is still alive, we take care of him. We actually bring him to many places that we can bring him to. And whatever that he wants, we have this love and care and compassion for him. Then we talk to him. And he was very happy. His life is very fulfilled. And because of that, when he passed away, none of us really cried. Nobody cried, except one of my sister, that was the younger sister, that was given away to somebody when she was less than even a month old. Because at that time, I think the condition was like we got a big family, 9 of us. So the last one was a girl, or second last, not the last. My grandmother said, another girl, why not give away? So my grandmother just say one word, nobody can object. She was given away. But her good karma, before she got married, she came to know that she was part of my family. She actually wanted to find out why was she given away. And the condition arise, I think about 20-30 years ago. Then she somehow contacted my sister. Then we had a meeting with her. We explained the whole thing to her. And she became very happy after that. Then now she is my real sister. Actually my real sister. And we are very close now. She's very happy now. She was the only daughter that cried because she couldn't have the, what I should say, the first 20 over years before she got married, she didn't stay with us. She didn't have the love and the care of the father and the mother at that time, for that period. So after she got married, she only come back a few times a year. Quite close, but not the closeness that she would have wanted to. So when my father passed away, she was the only daughter that cried, but not long, for a while. So, like the Buddha said, even during the early day when he was a bodhisattva, when his own son died, he always said this, no amount of sorrow and lamentation can bring back the dead, is it? So no point. You cry also no use. Then he always used this statement, whatever that is of the condition to arise is of the condition to pass away. Whatever that has arisen has already passed away. So why do you want to lament? Then he said, no amount of sorrow and lamentation can bring back the dead. So that wisdom makes him a bodhisattva, very different from the normal year. He never cried. He never cried. He just accept what happened with right view and right understanding. Well, he had this wisdom. Even your own body don't belong to you. Understand? Wherein wealth, wherein son. In the Dhammapada, the Buddha said that. He said, those people who say, this is my son, my wealth, my possession. The Buddha said, this only the fools lament. F-O-O-L. The foolish people. You know why the Buddha said that? Yeah, he said, for that very body also don't belong to him. Wherein son, wherein wealth. Understand? Well, when you truly understand the reality of your form and mind, you had the wisdom to understand all this. Then there is no sorrow. There is no lamentation. Things are just the way it is. Don't worry, you will come to understand later. Ching'en. Yeah. Yes, suddenly she become what she is. Yeah. She got Alzheimer and all those things. Loss of memory. This is what the Buddha say. The 8 types of suffering. Old age. One of them. And because you are related, that's why you arise the pity for her. You felt pitiful for her. But what she is going through is part of her karmic condition. The past conditioned her to be what she is. So that's why sometimes you have this, what they call wisdom to compare things. If you don't have the wisdom, there can be a lot of problem. If you think with contentment, is it? Your mother's case. At least, not so bad, a little bit of Alzheimer. Not like those, like your brother. Is it your brother or what? The one with, your uncle with the skin problem one. See, he suffer. Now he's better. That time, like you described, a lot of pain. Remember? That time you even wish that if he can pass away, it will relieve his pain a lot. That is life. Okay, what you all think? Like she said, it's something like euthanasia. You heard of euthanasia? Mercy killing. But in this case, she didn't kill. The thought arise. Yeah, she got an uncle, very old, but very sick. A lot of this illness, I think until the skin like noir in Hokkien, have to scrape all the skin out. Diabetic, from diabetic. In English, what you call noir, noir. Rotted away. Is it the word? PK? No, not fast, like noir, noir. In Hokkien, no. But very painful, huh? So she had that thought at that time. They were trying to help and look after the uncle. He said, it's better for him if he pass away. So that he has the condition to release from all those. You see, it's not whether cruel or not cruel. More important is your mental intention. Your intention is to help him free, understand? Help him to release. But don't arise the intention to kill. Understand? Because it's just a thought. How good if he can just peacefully pass away. Because you don't have the intention to kill. It is out of your compassion or goodness that you want him to be relieved of all those things. Understand? Whereas euthanasia is different. Euthanasia. Killing is killing. No such thing as mercy killing. You can have the good intention to relieve the pain. That part is very wholesome. Understand? Born of right thought. But the act of killing is still killing. Because nature's law takes its course. When you kill, action and reaction. But when you kill without anger, not so bad. When you kill with compassion, not so bad. That type of root is actually don't have the strong evil roots of greed, hatred, especially hatred and delusion. A little bit of delusion. Because that killing, although in the name of euthanasia, is still killing. Understand? There is still the desire or the intention to kill. Maybe you have that view to think, if I do this mercy killing, it will help this person a lot. Otherwise, he suffer a lot. It's just like a doctor. When he diagnoses a patient with some critical sickness or disease, maybe not time to tell the patient yet. So he lie. He say, oh, you are okay, don't worry. But actually he lie. But that is not the negative type of intentional lie that has a negative selfishness or what they call negativity. This one is with good intention. Compared to a person that doesn't lie but spoke the truth to hurt somebody to make him die. You know how can it happen? Especially those children who wants the family, the parents' property. They purposely go and tell the parent, hey, doctor say you got cancer, no? He say, you wouldn't live long already. He go and tell the parent like that. And that is telling the truth. You better get ready. Do the will and all those things. I mean, this type of truth hurts, you see. I think it happened to one of the Tan Sri I was told. I don't know whether true. I heard that story. Until he got so fed up. Yeah? After that, he didn't die. He recovered from that critical sickness. Then he decided to donate 90% of his wealth. I think it's a is a developer, if I'm not wrong. I forgot the name already. During the 80s, very rich one. One Tansri. When he came to know that all the children just have that thought that if he go, they can get all the property. Then when he recovered, he changed the will. I was told. I don't know whether true or not. I heard about it. Could be true. Okay. I think we need to maybe go to other people. You got any more thing? No. Michelle, you want to report? Yeah. You're very mindful of your breath, Oh, never mind, don't worry, Yes. Oh, inside there you know you are dreaming. When you are inside dreaming, you know you are dreaming. Very good. You have the awareness inside there. Oh, sadhu. Yes. Don't worry. Yes. I know. Yes. I know. At your forehead there. Yeah. Sadhu. Don't worry. That is very good. Because when you are able to develop the anapanasati, you become very peaceful, very quiet. Then sometimes you enter into a state like you doze off. But you are aware inside. That one is very good. Because the mind that have the ability to be aware when you lost consciousness is very, very good. It's from your past. It will come back to you. That's why after that you have this energy thing that you feel. Then when it disperses, there's a lot of joy, a lot of peace. Don't worry. Let it happen. You just continue to do what comes naturally to you. What you have cultivated before will come back to you. Then you will know what is going on. Just continue. Then develop your mindfulness more and more. Try to develop this daily mindfulness, like I wrote to you in the email. Then develop the wisdom. Then the third type of peace will arise. Okay. Sadhu to you. Anything else? No. You came back from the retreat. We want to hear from you. She went to Thailand for 3 weeks. What's the name of the temple? Wat Tat Thong. Is it Chiang Mai side or what? Chiang Rai or Chiang Mai? Chiang Mai. Chiang Mai, huh? Anybody heard of that temple? Wat Tat Thong? Chinese temple. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So you stay there 3 weeks with your... 2 weeks only. Your mother, your sister, they are all there. Oh, your mother and your auntie. How was the retreat? Tell us something.